It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Each month, Mayor Bill Peduto joins us on this program, and even though April has been an extremely busy month, his honor has managed to make it into our studio on this April 28th. Mayor Peduto, we're glad to see you again. How are you?
Essential Pittsburgh. So someday we'll have my singing on that track.
Yeah.
Or at least for the days that I come in, you know, maybe after.
We've got it recorded from the last time, which I don't. That was a tough one to top. So we might get Guster in here to, you know, to lay down some tracks to go with it. And I'm going to ask you about that a little bit later. If you have a comment or question for the mayor, you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. So how busy were you during the run-up to the Pennsylvania primary?
Well, I had a slate of candidates that I was supporting and was trying to get their message out as much as I could, but there was really, I think, a lot more heavy lifting being done on the grassroots level with the people that were supporting the different campaigns. So my busy part was just in running the city and just making sure people remembered that it was election day and getting out, and to make sure that with all the people who were coming into the city that we allowed and had accessibility for people to see their candidates, no matter who that candidate was, and the ability for people to carry out their First Amendment rights. And I was very proud of the work that our public safety personnel did, and in particular, Pittsburgh police.
And not just the candidates, but the surrogates, one of whom was President Bill Clinton.
It was.
Who stopped in. And this was one of my favorite moments of the whole campaign appearances. The luminaries of the Democratic Party sitting there as Bill spoke to educators, and they're all, you know, people like Rich Fitzgerald and Tim Doyle, I think, was there. And, you know, they've got a blazer or a suit and tie. And
Jay Costa, Senator Costa.
Senator Costa was there. And you are there wearing a tie, but a penguin jacket. A Pittsburgh Penguins. You didn't have a tie. That's right. You just had the Penguins jacket as you're there with President Clinton. What did he say about that? Did he notice that?
That's a nice jacket you got there, Mayor. Go Pens.
He said that?
No. He just looked at me as I came up, and you could just look. It was like one of those head-to-toe looks somebody will give you. And I just said, I just got off a plane. He's there, oh, okay, all right, where are you coming from? And I was like, Chicago. I just literally got off I came off the plane right here so that I could be here. And he goes, all right. That's about it.
Well, actually, we happened to have a 90.5 WESA microphone there to capture the moment, which actually went something like this. Mayor Peduto, that's a real nice Penguins jacket you got. You know, I like the Penguins. But as you also know, my wife Hillary was a senator that was representing the great state of New York. So
we stayed away from that one.
You know, I'm rooting for the Rangers.
I found a nice picture on Google of Donald Trump sitting next to John McEnroe at a Rangers game, and that was his first visit was on game one.
Uh-huh.
And I just put it out there on Twitter. I'm there. The real reason Trump's in town today. So I was trying to align him with Rangers, but. Now, I got to tell you, though, after it got done, I had an opportunity to talk to the president for about 20 minutes. And what we talked about was the opioid and heroin epidemic that's going on throughout this country. And he told me of 4 to 5 specific examples of the children of friends who have died of overdoses, and going into great detail about each of the people, their background, their kids, what their kids did. And basically 20-somethings, early 30s in each case, all who had parents who were highly successful. And then just talking about how it is, you know, this is the guy who was the president during the crack epidemic, right? Mm-hmm. And when we saw that just explode in cities throughout. And he spoke about this as a situation that's worse. I had the opportunity also to meet with the head special agent in charge out of Philadelphia with the FBI, who's running a program that we're now piloting in Pittsburgh and a few other cities. I think there's three cities or four cities in the country that not only goes after the crime. So we're not only finding the people that are dealing these pills and the people who are dealing heroin, but it also goes after the addict to help them. So it's a two-track, you know, we're going to try to crack down on the availability of the drug, but that's never worked. I mean, we tried that in the 80s, the 90s, and it's never been successful. But we're going to find the person who's addicted, and we're going to get them help. And that special agent in charge said, this is my third campaign. He goes, my first campaign was in the 80s with cocaine. He said, my second was in the 90s with crack. He said, this one is worse than both combined.
Did the president say anything about the approach that was taken and whether, and hindsight's always 20/20, but whether the tough on crime approach as opposed to the treatment and rehabilitation that is now being emphasized, that if nothing else, he's evolved on this?
I didn't talk to him about it, but I was running campaigns back then in 94 when the crime bill was happening. I mean, it was difficult enough at that time to try and get things passed. Obviously, you could still get things passed back then, but it required crossing the aisle in order to be able to work on compromises. You can't even get a bill like that even to be brought up today. It's unfortunate, but that's also the reality. So during that time, the crime bill, I was running a campaign. Our headquarters was in Sharon, PA, and I remember the militia from Crawford County came down in full battle dress uniform with huge signs saying, don't let Clinton gore your gun rights. Because if you remember, the crime bill was not only tough on crime, it also did the RICO acts in order to go after the cartels that were creating the gangs that were a part of every city, including Pittsburgh, where we had Crips and Bloods and Larimer Avenue, Wilkinsburg Gang Law, and all these other gangs that were running our neighborhoods. It also took away assault weapons. And trying to get something like that to happen today is impossible. So there were both sides that wanted to see things in that bill. I'd love to have the conversation with him about what the horse trading was like in order to get that bill passed. But at the time that that was happening, there was a war. I mean, I lived on Highland Avenue in Shadyside, right by the border of East Liberty. And I remember East Liberty in the 90s, and it was not the way some people describe it. It was all-out warfare going on in that neighborhood. My car was stolen from right on Highland Avenue. It was used in a police shootout and a drive-by. And the guys that I had to go to testify against for stealing it were members of Larimer Avenue Wilkinsburg Gang. And I've seen their names in homicides and other things that have been involved in the city.
Wow.
But that is just a little fraction of what the people who were living in East Liberty had to go through on a daily basis. I remember a commander, we were trying to find out where the heroin was being distributed from. And we ended up finding it was at Walsh's, an old bar on Broad Street. And I asked the commander, how did we know? He said, because the victim, the DOA, who had the needle in his arm, was still standing in the stall in the bathroom.
Incredible.
But on a weekly basis, picking up bodies, literally picking up bodies off the streets of Broad Street. We had the triple, I can't remember what the commander used to call it, the triple something, but it was the plasma location next door to the state store, next door behind the library where people would then pass out. And it was on a continual basis. Plus, you had the homeless shelter at East Liberty Presbyterian that didn't have any day activities like we have now at the East End Cooperative Ministries. So the people would leave the homeless shelter, go sell their plasma, get a bottle, and then pass out on the streets. And so it was a very different time when you talk about the crime bill and the things that were going on. We had warfare going on in the streets of our cities. We had assault weapons being used, and our police were outgunned, and the crime bill tried to take effect of all of that, and I think there was some horse trading to make it happen.
It's the Central Pittsburgh. Our guest is Mayor Bill Peduto, and if you want to join the conversation at 412-246-2002, you can do so. We have some callers holding, and I want to get to their questions, but there are some other serious matters that I wanted to delve into first. One involves the State Department of Environmental Protection citing the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority for making an unapproved modification to its drinking water treatment process. As you know, the DEP says the authority switched corrosion inhibitors used in the water treatment process from soda ash to caustic soda 2 years ago without getting DEP approval. So, Mayor Peduto, explain what this means. Why wasn't the public informed about it, and who is responsible for it?
Well, the decision was made back in 2014 when we still had a contract with a international corporation that was basically running the Water and Sewer Authority. So they had the director at that point had two bosses. He had the board of PWSA and the international company, which had its own logic of how to do things. So one of the things we did is we got rid of that, and we hired a director, and since then we've replaced that director as well. The use of the other formula, the caustic formula, is on an approved list that was created by the state of Pennsylvania in 1995. So the company felt, since it was already an approved process, that it didn't warrant the need to notify DEP. They were wrong. It did warrant that need. Since that time, you know, a lot of testing has been going on. DEP tested as recently, I think, as last week. The numbers are all fine. But given what happened in Michigan and given how it rested itself at the door of the governor, I don't fault the DEP for really going and doing what they've been doing. At the end, what Veolia, the company that was used to be in charge of PWSA, did was a procedural violation, not a violation of safety, I would say. However, that doesn't mean that we won't test, retest, triple test, quadruple test, given the light of how devastating anything could be.
So you're satisfied that enough's being done to make sure this doesn't happen again?
I don't know enough about the science of it, so I ask engineers and I ask them about what cause and effect this could have had. And to everyone that I have asked, they said minimal to none.
Okay. And as far as the concerns about lead, which...
That's my concern. That's the questions that I ask about. Is there a change in using a different formula that would cause lead to be released from the pipe that would put the people of Pittsburgh in jeopardy? And each of the different people that I've talked to about this have told me, independent of PWSA, folks who have no business with Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority, nor are employed by the city, have said no, that there's no real damage or there's no real threat
from this changing of the.
However, the notification to DEP should have been made.
Right. So, what's being done to ensure that that doesn't happen again?
Well, a lot more oversight, getting rid of a company that had two masters, and being able to overhaul the Water and Sewer Authority the way that we've done. The second part of it is any changes now being mandated by the interim director have to come to the board, and anything that would involve any change in the way that we treat water would be made available to the public.
And as far as just there were concerns about lead before any of this came out.
Well, there should be. I mean, our pipes are over 100 years old. They're lead pipes, and they have a life to them. There is, if we were to take care of the infrastructure in this country, it would cost trillions and trillions of dollars to be able to take care of it. What the problem is we build out all this infrastructure and we don't have a trust fund to maintain it, and then nobody wants to pay taxes, and then they get upset because you have to maintain it. I mean, it doesn't last forever. It's like buying a house and the roof starts falling in and saying, I'm not going to do anything about it, and then you have no roof, and you have to build a new roof instead of doing the repair. Nobody wants to pay for the repair. No one wants to pay to repair a bridge, or nobody even thinks about what's underneath the ground. Or that's public infrastructure. That's owned by us, like we own a house, and we have to pay for it. And we have to raise taxes to pay for it if we don't take care of it on a routine basis. So what we're doing in the city, I can complain about the world, but I can do something about the city, is we're laying out 10-year master plans for our fixed assets. And we're looking at everything from our fire stations to our urban forest, from the steps and retaining walls to the streets. We've never had it. we've never had a 10-year plan. And then people get upset because stuff starts crumbling. Well, it doesn't start crumbling in a year or two. It crumbles 20, 30 years of not maintaining it. So we're going to put together that plan, and it's going to show exactly how much it's going to cost to be able to maintain the public fixed assets. And then we're going to go about fixing it. There's going to require additional resources, but there's some unique ways we're trying to be able to pay for it without having to raise taxes.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Peter in McMurray with a question. Hi, Peter. You're on with Mayor Peduto.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick question. I was wondering if the city, now that electric cars are becoming more affordable, and I do a lot of driving, and the air quality here could use some improvement. I'm on on-street parking, and I'm wondering if there's any way the city could designate areas like we have for handicapped people so that for electric cars so that we could have places to charge our cars if we were to get one and we're stuck with on-street parking. I can take my answer off the air. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Peter.
I thought you were going to offer to buy me a Tesla. I was like, yeah, well, yes, I'll take a Tesla, Peter. So part of this Smart Cities competition that Pittsburgh has been selected as a finalist, there's a company called Vulcan that is owned by Paul Allen, who created Microsoft and owns a bunch of rock and roll memorabilia and a couple sports teams, I think.
Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah. So he's putting $10 million in it. He wants to know, what are you going to do about electric vehicles? So we are not required, but if we want to win this competition, we better have a strategy of how we're going to deal with electric vehicles. The world's moving in that direction. It's going to happen a lot sooner than people think. But unlike Washington State, that has electricity provided by hydropower and solar power and wind power, our power is produced by coal, and mainly either coal or nuclear. And electric may not be the best means to being able to be environmentally responsible. So what we're doing as well is we're looking at creating direct energy plants and putting into the city the ability to power the city through small microgrids and using combinations of gas and renewable and coming up with a much cleaner way of doing it. So yes, we are going to have stations for you to be able to charge your car. Yes, we're going to be looking at things like putting solar panels on top of our parking garages and having the opportunity for you to park your car in a certain area and charge it off of the sun. And yes, it's going to be part of the plan that we submit to the Department of Transportation in anticipation of winning this $50 million plus on May 24th.
Right, yeah. You were out in California working on that. This $50 million technology grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation. Yeah. Where do we stand? Where do things stand with
this? I think we've got a really, really good chance. I'm out there with the other mayors. All they brought together the seven mayors. There's actually five finalists, and then they added two other cities to it because their applications were good. But, you know, like the mayor of Austin is talking about how they have 100 autonomous vehicles without drivers, driving the streets of Austin today. Google has 100. But we've got over a dozen with Uber down driving throughout the Strip and in Lawrenceville. We've got a few with Carnegie Mellon driving through Oakland. We'll have 100 within a year or so. We'll be up at that number as well. So we'll compete with Austin on that type of technology. Kansas City has Google Fiber, and they're talking about how using Google Fiber we'll be able to connect these sensors and do all these other things. People don't realize we have DQE fiber, which is the same as Google Fiber. It runs throughout the city, except it's dark. We want to light it up. Google will not come to Pittsburgh. People are like, why aren't you getting Google Fiber? I want my Google Fiber. Why aren't you? Yeah, you're no smart city. And it's because we have Fios. We have whatever Comcast is called. We have DQE fiber. And the cost of installing in the city for Google would never be able to make up for the profit that they could receive off Google Fiber. So there's not really an interest. But we have fiber running through the city. We're just not utilizing it. So I think we can compete there. And then we have a whole array of different things that we can beat the other cities on. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what the final product looks like. We have I think, like over 50 different companies and organizations that are now a part of this plan. And I got to tell you, I want to win, and we're going to win, and we better win. If we don't win, we got a really great vision for the city that will be launched on May 24th, and we just got to make it happen. If we get $50 million plus, it's going to happen a lot sooner because we have to spend that money in 3 years. And you're going to see a lot of different changes that occur.
What will that money go into?
All the different types of infrastructure that would connect communities, that would provide new options on transit, that would have the ability to connect it through technology and sensor detection and being able to make traffic and mobility work a lot better and provide greater accessibility for our lowest income areas. If you think about what we did in the 1950s when we created Smart City, we basically put a highway through the Hill District. We took the East Liberty and put a racetrack around it. We built a city for the automobile and the automobile only, and we forgot about people. And what we want to do is correct that and reconnect the Hill District to the neighborhoods that have the jobs. We want to be able to have accessibility and mobility for people in Homewood and East Liberty and be able to take away from what we built with highways and roads and still at the same time provide greater mobility through the use of sensors and technology so traffic can move a lot easier. People will say, well, why don't you build a subway? Well, this is a $50 million challenge that wants to look at what the future of transportation will be.
Yeah, how about a bullet train from downtown to Oakland? I mean, just...
But the cost, again, is you're looking at billions with a B instead of $50 million with an M. So that's a vision we need to have. We need to have a 20-year vision about transportation for this county and then beyond that looks at things like a light rail system that's a spine line that we talked about in the 80s. That idea should never have gone away. But transportation is going to change so rapidly in the next 10 years. Look at your iPhone, okay? Then think about 10 years ago what you had in your hand. It didn't have a camera. It was a phone. I mean, some people text, not many, because you had to go through the numbers and get all the different. Now it's...
20 years ago, you carried a brick with an antenna coming out of it.
But in 10 years, all of a sudden, the entire world's in your hand. In 10 years, autonomous vehicles are not only going to be commonplace. So when you dial up Uber, I hope they make that sound, by the way. Like a George Jetson, will be able to pull up. You'll sit there like they did in the old stagecoach, old-timey days, and talk with your friend as that vehicle takes you. And that vehicle is going to be talking to every other vehicle on the street, knowing exactly where they're going, how fast. And you'll be in this caravan, spaced, going the same miles per hour. And then all those vehicles will be talking to all the traffic signals. And it will all be done through algorithms to get you to point A to point B so much quicker. And then when you're talking about that's in the next 10 years, what's that in the next 20? So if you're going to spend billions of dollars with a B on a subway system or a light rail system, I'm sorry, is that even going to be something that people are going to use in 30 years?
I see where you're going with that.
So we don't know where all of this is heading, but we know where the next steps are. And if we get this Smart City Challenge, Pittsburgh will be one of the world's leaders in 21st century mobility. And you know what? If we don't get it, we still have the chance to do it anyways with partnerships that we're building off this application process.
Well, let's hope it happens. We're talking with Mayor Bill Peduto on today's edition of Essential Pittsburgh. He's going to stick around with us for a few more minutes. We will take more of your calls at 412-246-2002. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is the mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto, who joins us each month. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH@WESA.FM. On Twitter at ESSPGH. We had a caller. They couldn't stay on, but there was an interesting question that came up about the idea of, and maybe you've already answered this, but this is how people in Pittsburgh, I think, are thinking, especially anybody who was trying to get from downtown to Oakland today, where if you're on the Liberty Bridge, you can't get to 376. There's a detour that takes you through downtown, which is no picnic during rush hour. And then if you're trying to get somewhere in Oakland near the University of Pittsburgh, it is pretty much of a nightmare. So someone was asking about the idea of an elevated highway going from downtown to Oakland. Or is that something that falls into under the heading of things are changing so rapidly that...
No. I mean, there's very few highways, new highways being constructed in the country right now. The idea that traffic mitigation is solved by creating more lanes of highways is something that engineers and planners have sort of moved away from. The concept that you could create a highway would have to be funded at least 60% by federal government, and then there would be a state match, and then there would have to be a local match. We don't have a local match, which means we would have to raise the taxes in order to be able to come up with a local match before we could even apply for the federal or state funds. The federal government passed a transportation bill for the first time in years that really doesn't have much opportunity to even do that, so there's really not much money. And the state government passed a transportation bill a couple of years ago that, again, was the first in a number of years, and that money's already been all accounted for. So when people talk about, well, I saw somebody like posted this idea that they had this subway system and light rail system for Allegheny County, and they're like, look, it connects everything. It's great. The cost of that is so astronomically high that it would probably take all of the federal government's allocation for the entire country for a year to just give it to Pittsburgh. So it's not, people are like, what do you think about this, Bill? What are your, it's like, it's not even worth talking about because it's unrealistic. I mean, just the idea of taking a subway from downtown to Oakland, just that little area, is in the billions of dollars. When you start looking at this and doing it all throughout, you know, the least expensive way of doing anything is using what you already have and improving upon it. So what we have to do before we start thinking about all this new stuff is we have to fix what we have. Our roads are in terrible condition. We don't have sensors and detections for people to sit in a left-hand lane at 1 a.m. as your light is red for 2 minutes and the other light stays green, but there's no traffic.
There's no, absolutely no synchronicity with those
Nothing.
Lights at all.
The bridges are falling more than anywhere else in this country, and people want new. We've got to fix what we have first. Let's fix what we have, modernize it to be able to work. One of the things that Pittsburgh has that other cities don't have is these busways. And people will say, like, why do you have them? It's because a lot of people built busways in the 60s and the 70s, but in the 80s, they converted them to light rail. And even our busway, our MLK in 1974, was designed with enough concrete and at a certain grade that it could be converted to light rail. And the idea was to take it all the way out to Monroeville. We never raised the local money to be able to go after the federal money. So as DC built out a light rail system in Salt Lake City and Portland, Oregon, we never did anything because we would never raise the taxes locally to get the federal money. We still haven't done it, by the way. But all of a sudden now, companies like Uber are like, what in the hell is that? That busway? We could be running autonomous vehicles on it. We could be doing, and there's all of a sudden now this new rubber to road that beats fixed rail, because that Uber that could run could go directly to that person's home and be able to get them and then take them to where they are. And there's the first mile, last mile concept of public transit that really separates a lot of people, especially those with limited income, because they can't get to that first mile of getting to the LRT, the light rail station, or they can't get that last mile of getting from the fixed system to work or to the doctor or to the grocery store. And when you're elderly and you don't have a car, that becomes big. If you're a person with needs and you don't, that becomes really big. But with this concept now that we have these old busways and autonomous vehicles are coming, all of a sudden we may have an advantage over those that built those fixed systems years ago.
Let's go to Nick in Shadyside. Hi, Nick. You're on with Mayor Peduto.
Hello.
Hello, Nick. You're on the air.
Ah, hi. Yes, I wanted to, I just moved here from Missouri. Actually, I'm a grad student at Carnegie Mellon University.
Welcome, Nick.
And I wanted to compliment, I turned on the radio here. I was on going to the grocery store, and I wanted to compliment the mayor on how articulate and informed he sounds on these transportation issues. And I think that this is not necessarily common amongst big city mayors around the country. But what I'm kind of wondering is how has your administration or any past administrations really in this municipal government of Pittsburgh fostered these relationships with companies like Uber to be able to have this sort of vision of how the transportation infrastructure is going to develop in the future, and also have the relationship to implement some of these ideas? Like, what are you guys doing behind the scenes to necessarily get these companies on board or to come here and engage experimentally with different things? Or is it like through the universities, or what is going on with that basically?
No, I just, two nights ago, spent an hour and a half with Travis Kalanick, the CEO of Uber. And he comes in quietly, about, I guess, once a month, to check on it. You know, we are creating the Global Innovation Center for Uber right here in Pittsburgh. They've employed several hundred people over the past year, invested tens of millions of dollars. But that's only the beginning. Travis loves Pittsburgh, and he really believes that this is the city that could make it happen. When he was asked once recently by somebody, I don't know who it was, they said, what are the three areas in this world that you see really expanding innovation during the next 10 years? He said China, Japan, and Pittsburgh. And there's a lot of other tech firms that are feeling the same thing. We've reached out to PayPal since they've decided to leave North Carolina because of the discrimination law that they passed. Unfortunately, the state of Pennsylvania does not have an anti-discrimination law, but the city of Pittsburgh created one of the first commissions on human relations and expanded it when we created our charter to be more open. We have a governor that's passed an executive order to end discrimination in the state of Pennsylvania, and we have a chance to launch them. And what do these companies want? What does Uber want as they bring 400 engineers from around the world to Pittsburgh? What does Google want when they have 700, or Bosch when they're expanding from 60 to 360 and Apple is doubling their employees? They want to live in an environment with multi-modes of transportation. They want to be able to bike to work, and they'll tell you this. And they build in the infrastructure of their new buildings bike places to not just park your bike, but where you can take care of your bike. They want to be able to have a public transit system to be able to get to work. They don't want to have to own a car. They want to live in an urban area where everything is accessible. That includes not just the things that take care of you, but the other things, the third places where you can be and where you want to live. And look at Pittsburgh. It was built with all of these neighborhoods. And all of the neighborhoods were self-sustaining. They had the different parts. During the 80s and the 90s, when we were knocked to our knees, they left. They became hollowed in a lot of these neighborhoods. Now, as we rebuild our neighborhoods, the bones are still there. These beautiful 19th century buildings, these walkable communities, the main streets that can be restored and rebuilt. And to somebody coming from the West Coast, or for somebody coming to a city that basically has built out and it's all these big boxes and the same architecture and everywhere else, and they see Pittsburgh in our rolling hills, in our beautiful churches in the middle of that neighborhood, they're blown away. We forget about how amazing the city is so often. But when somebody else comes here and sees it, it's like an old world that's still all intact. So again, we need to build from what we have, improve upon it, and build out for 21st century a structure that modernizes it, whether it's for transportation or water systems or anything else. But the beautiful thing about it is all the pieces of the puzzle are there.
A couple of things I want to hit on in the last few minutes that we have. The Pittsburgh Marathon is this weekend. The city's police union president says mandatory overtime officers will work this weekend during the marathon. He says doing that violates the terms of the force's labor agreement. I'm not sure what you can say about this, but would you care to comment?
Well, I don't know if it actually does violate any terms. I guess an arbitrator will decide that. When we don't have enough officers to be able to take care of a public event, then it becomes incumbent upon command to order officers to be there. I mean, that's part of the job. It's to take care and to serve the public interest to make sure people are safe. We offer the opportunity to our officers to work and secondary details where they can wear their Pittsburgh police uniform and work for somebody other, a private entity, other than the city, and to make additional money by use of wearing that Pittsburgh police uniform. That is not specifically given to the police bureau. That is something that's negotiated, and you never see a state trooper working at a Giant Eagle or a Pennsylvania state trooper working outside of a bar. So when the union starts to complain about officers having to work in order to be able to take care of the primary interest, which is the people of the city of Pittsburgh, then we're going to have to look at the secondary detail as well. Because if secondary detail becomes primary detail, you're no longer serving as a Pittsburgh police officer.
One other thing before we get to the closer here, the kicker of our visit, and that is, since we last spoke, the city's overseer, the Intergovernmental Cooperation Authority, with whom you've had a bit of an adversarial relationship, announced it is not renewing the contract of its executive director, Harry Scortino, and pledged more transparency going forward. What do you think?
You said it, you know, the entire time. You know, we knew that there were problems there. We wanted to try to work with them. They made the problems worse. Their board decided not to release the taxpayers' money. That money is owed to the people of Pittsburgh. It's $20 million. If you live in a world where you throw away all of your records, where you have no bid contracts and contracts just being given, but you don't even know who they've been given to because you've destroyed all the records in order to be able to do it, is it really a good idea then to also go to war and withhold $20 million? I don't want to say they called this upon themselves, but they called this upon themselves. If you're going to operate in a dealing that I don't know of any government operation in the United States of America, no government structure, an authority, a board, a commission, state, local, federal, anyone has the ability to give out contracts without putting out bids, then destroy the records of what those contracts are, and then withhold the money that is supposed to be going to the people and use that same money potentially to give out even more contracts. I think this goes well beyond an executive director.
Fair enough. And finally, we've been reading about your relationship with the band Guster. They're a Boston-based alt-rock band, and they're playing at the Three Rivers Arts Festival on June 10th, and there are rumors you may be taking the stage with them. What's up?
So Guster came into Pittsburgh during the snowstorm back, I think, in February, and they got stuck. They were supposed to go to Philly, and they only made it as far as Pittsburgh. And they ended up just hanging around the North Side and finding out how amazing the North Side is. They stopped by the Mattress Factory, Randyland, a couple of other places. And so they decided to do a free concert for the people in an alleyway. It was called the Guster Dumpster Concert. And they were played next to a dumpster, and it became the most watched video that the band has ever produced. And they talked about how they love Pittsburgh, but there were only like 12 people and two dogs that showed up for the show. So I wrote to them on Twitter and I just said, hey guys, next time you come back, how about we do it inside and we get more than 12 people and two dogs? And 12 people and two dogs became this thing, and they wrote back and I wrote back. And so then we found out that they're coming in for the Three Rivers Arts Festival, and they reached out and they said they wanted me to sing with them on one song. And I said, if you can write a song that's about Pittsburgh, it's about dogs and dumpsters, and it's about getting stuck in a snowstorm, I'll certainly sing a couple of verses. So they said, we'll write it. So we'll have to find out at the Three Rivers Arts Festival on Friday night whether Guster will come through with their promise of writing about the Pittsburgh dumpster dog North Side snowstorm song.
I can't wait.
A little bit longer than Satellite as a title, but hopefully just as good.
Where are you watching the Penguins tonight?
I'm going to actually be at the Pittsburgh Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions.
Right, that is tonight. We talked with the Skyliners, Jimmy Beaumont from the Skyliners yesterday. So.
Yeah. Walt Lester from the Skyliners used to work with my dad as a salesman for Claire All in the 70s. Like, I got like this connection to every one of them. Sean McDowell. I mean, back in the days of WIDD 104.7, the Metro, when it was the only new wave station in town.
Stevie Guitar Downs.
Yes. And then Joe Grushecki, and I'll be there. So I'm going to be there planted by a TV set. And just watching the game from, I guess, the Hard Rock Cafe. There's no, it's at Stage AE.
Yeah, Stage AE this year. Stage AE. On the north side.
Yep.
On the north shore, I should say. Great. Go Pens.
North side.
Bill Peduto, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, it's always good to see you, Paul.
Coming up, a conversation with the stars of City Theater's smash hit, The Last Match. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.